Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Saints Score podcast. Southampton, they've returned to Premier League action, meaning that we are also back after, what, just over a month when we analysed Nathan Jones' squads and what he should do. And it looks like he's going to have to do an awful lot. We're all four of us here today and in the same room for the first time in what feels like forever. Jamie, Mikey, Ollie and myself. And Jamie, I'll start with you. How are you doing? And, you know, how's your life been in the last month?
I say, I don't remember the last time we were all here together.
Three years ago.
In the Boast household.
Yeah, in the back room.
In the back room.
Dodgy table.
Don't do that for the microphone. All right. We're recording with one microphone as we have technical difficulties. However, so apologies for the sound in advance. But yeah, I've been good, had a good Christmas. Got all three Saints shirts from this season, so I'm happy man.
I was going to say, did anyone else get Saints related gifts? Anything Saints related?
I don't think so.
Well, you did in a way. Your tickets to, I don't know, to Lincoln game.
Yeah.
They were a fun gift.
Yeah, a little bit of a treat for myself to go to the Lincoln game, watch some, what would you say, mediocre football.
Yeah. But what did you do at the Lincoln
game?
I went
out to the hospitality bit, which was nice.
What was your favourite bit about the hospitality? I don't know if our listeners have been before, so...
You get free drinks, free food, so I was just basically dining out on that, really, filling myself up. Just a nice view as well, comfy seats. It did feel a bit weird though when you saw Northern and Itch and North both singing, and I was just kind of sat there and kind of like, come on lads, let's see if we can do it. It feels really strange, you feel a little bit disconnected, but the view's really nice. You can kind of see all the little pieces moving or not moving, as it was against the Lincoln game. But yeah, it was good, it was good fun.
Anything interesting in the last month as well, since they've last heard you?
Oh, put me on the spot there.
next question, please.
Okay. I don't know, what have I done? Were you referring to something?
No, we got
Palace away tickets.
Oh yeah, we're going to Palace, so me and Jamie will live report from Palace or something, I don't know. Yeah. You put me a bit on the spot there, Harry.
I really should
be able to do something in a month, something that's been excited, but no. had a blank. Yeah, go on to Mikey.
Okay, Mikey, how have you been in the last month?
Good. Enjoyed the World Cup. It was a lot of fun watching that and watching Argentina and Messi win it. Of course, England going out to France was a little bit heartbreaking, but you know, it was a good World Cup and quite an enjoyable experience. And then Christmas and everything like that's been lovely. So yeah. How's the month off been for you, Harry?
It's been okay, to be fair. I had a few games during the World Cup, but I sort of felt like when England went out, from that point, you used to be supporting Kane, Foden, Saka, and then you have to go back to Elie Nussi, Adam Armstrong, and everything changes from that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after the 3 days, after the World Cup final, we had a game, Nathan Jones' first home one. Jamie, what were your opinions on it? We just about snuck through after going 1-0 down, but Che Adams' double. For me, it was almost a comfortable 2-1 win, because we should have won by more. A couple of dodgy misses at the end. Could have made it 3-1, 4-1. But 2-1 in the end against a League One team.
I think comfortable is over-exaggerating it a bit. Because I sat in the Kingsman for the first time, so it's quite interesting actually watching them. Actually be able to see everyone evenly rather than each goal. Like, you sat in the Chapel or the Northern, you can barely see anything on the other end. I could actually see everything. And I saw how poorly organised we were in the first half. Not necessarily poorly organised, but we kept trying to cross the ball into our strikers, who were, every single member of their back line was taller than them, which was utterly useless. And nothing, it's like, we're just lucky that they didn't have their shooting boots on apart from the first minute. If they actually were a half decent side, we were absolutely battered in the first half.
Mikey, could you tell, even though they're a League One side, that they've played during the World Cup, meaning they're fresh, they can pass the ball about nice and quickly, they're used to each other, even though their League One season is middling at the moment, whereas for us, we played maybe two games just to warm up and we were just a bit off it.
They did look more alert for like at least the first 10 minutes, and of course that's when they got their goal. I thought it was a lovely introduction back to Southampton football, to be honest. You go, like you said, you're watching England play and you're supporting Harry Kane and Bukayo Saka and all these fantastic talents, and then 2 minutes into the Saints game you go, oh, this is what football's actually like. I remember this. But no, you could tell they were on it a little bit more than we were, and we sort of looked a little bit lost on what we wanted to do. And I just, it was so reflective of what happened in the Sheffield Wednesday game. In the fact we were playing League One opposition, we conceded early from a set piece. I'm pretty sure Sheffield Wednesday was as well, if I can remember correctly. I can't. It was too long ago for me to remember exact. But concede a goal early, and then you're fighting the game back, and we managed to sort of scrap a goal, basically, probably that shouldn't be allowed, because the penalty against Sheffield Wednesday was a little bit there. And then Che Adams was definitely offside for the first goal. And then we have to have a formation switch, change, go to a 4-3-3, and things start to work a little bit better. So it's almost like a three at the back doesn't really work with the players that we've got, because we don't have enough creativity from a singular player to sort of unlock a Lincoln side that were very disciplined, very well organised, and very difficult for us to break down. So yeah, that was my overall thoughts of the game.
I sort of only remembered at this moment that it still means the only team that we've beaten without going behind was Cambridge. Both Sheffield Wednesday, Lincoln, we went behind, Leicester, Chelsea, and another one in there, Bournemouth. No, we didn't go behind against Bournemouth. There we go, there's two
Only clean sheet of the season so far, Bournemouth.
Yeah. Ollie, apart from the Lincoln game, or when we progressed, Man City at home couldn't really get much tougher than that unless going up to the Etihad.
Yeah, I stayed up for it as well. And Man City, the only ones, they're like the number ones. I was like, if we don't get City, I could see us doing okay. Because you might think some of the bigger teams might rest players and then we might have a chance there. If Man City play their third team, we're still going to struggle. I mean, they're literally selling their youngsters to us. So, yeah, I knew it was going to be a tough one, and basically the only team we didn't want out of that draw, we ended up getting them. So that was a nice way to finish the day.
It was quite good, because I was away in Bournemouth at the time. I'd sort of missed that round of the League Cup, and I just saw the chat somewhat explode slightly negatively without anyone saying we're playing against someone. Oh well, we got City then, haven't we? Like, that's the one we've got.
Well, at the same time, Brighton, they got knocked out against Charlton, and I thought, do you know what? We might have a team that lacks confidence, they don't have McAllister, we might have a chance, even though they started the season pretty well. They didn't have Graham Potter, but it all unravelled quite quickly. Ollie, you were at the game, so you know, tell us what happened.
Well, the first thing I noticed was Brighton being so confident to take the ball deep, and when I don't mean like on the edge of their box, I mean in their like 6 yard box. Dunk and who's the other, is it the one from Chelsea, Colwell. Were both playing on the points of the 6 yard box, and Sanchez wouldn't pass it to him, he'd roll it to them, and they'd take it so far towards their own goal that created so much space in the midfield. And it basically just meant that our strikers and midfielders didn't know whether to go and press or not. Because when we did go and press them, they did make mistakes eventually. But when we didn't, their defensive midfielder, was it Caicedo, I believe his name is?
Caicedo. Ecuadorian.
Oh, yeah. He took the ball, and every single time we'd take it in under pressure, but would play a beautiful pass out, or he'd turn and play it. And Lallana kept coming into a pocket where he had so much space, he almost couldn't believe how much space he had. Diallo versus Lallana was an absolute mismatch for first half, and it was just, yeah, it was... It was, he had to come off at half time. In fact, I think if Jones had the balls, he would have taken them off earlier, because it just wasn't working. And it was, I'm surprised they didn't score even more. But yeah, it was really, you could see that the Saints players didn't know whether to press or not. But then you also have to respect Brighton for being so gutsy to basically take it that deep as well. And they're playing some brilliant football as well. They were playing some really nice one touch, two touch football straight out of their box, and then suddenly they're attacking, and they stretched the game so far that there was so much for them to play in. So I was frustrated because we were basically being played off the park, but then also very impressed by Brighton as well. They play some nice football.
It's the autonomy that they play with. Like, they all know where, you know, like when we played under Ralph a year and a half ago, you know, when anyone could play anywhere and it all made sense to them. They knew the system, they knew the roles, and they knew each other so well that everything just worked. And that's what Brighton's got. That's what happened under Graham Potter. And they brought in a manager who does the exact same thing. It's exact same formation, exact same mannerisms, exact same way. Of course, there's going to be little differences here and there, but it's basically a cut and copy paste of Graham Potter's system, and they all know it still. So, like, Trossard playing up top, I don't think he really had a massive impact, but he knew that he could drop in and someone would replace him up top, or he could drift into a wide area and someone would come inside. And that mannerisms, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication to get that right. But once you get it right, you become a top team. And that's what Brighton are doing, and that's what Newcastle are doing, is that autonomy in their system is so good and unbelievable that it doesn't matter who they play, they've got a really good chance of winning just because of how well everyone knows what they're doing and how they play.
I mean, you can tell that from the way they dismantled Chelsea at the back end of the first half of the season. They did lose to Villa, but obviously beat us. Jamie, I've heard from those two. What did you think about the game overall before we go into specifics where it could get a bit ugly?
I think when I saw the starting lineup, I was already scared because when Diallo starts in a game, I get a bit petrified, to be honest. I don't think he's the best player in the world. Maybe if we go down the championship, he'd be quite good.
Let's not start that.
But I think it was interesting seeing the team that played then against the team that played against Lincoln, because I think the Lincoln team was Lincoln's right. Was getting Woodlands. Mm. Yeah. As Lincoln, I think that was meant to be our 11 for this game. However, I can tell why Maitland-Niles was dropped, because he had an absolute stinker.
Yeah, he did have a stinker.
And it's just, I think I honestly don't understand him. I think his attitude. And he must have some mentality problem, because
maybe not completely fit either.
Yeah, but he has the talent to be a really good player for us. And he just absolutely loses it. Once there's one little mistake, then they come recurring. And that's why Diallo started, unfortunately.
He's a very relaxed player, isn't he? Maitland-Niles. He never looks like he's got out like second gear. And sometimes I don't mind that when you need a bit of calmness. Mm. But when you can't make 5-yard passes versus Lincoln in the cup, that's when there was real problems. Yeah. And I was watching it, and I was thinking, that's real basic stuff, that he hasn't been at the World Cup, so he might be not be in match fit or whatever, but
building himself up,
still making errors that the Lincoln players would be disappointed with, not making 5-yard passes. So I can see why he got dropped. I see what you mean, but again, I think Diallo didn't look great in that hole. I actually thought Maitland-Niles didn't look too bad when he came on. I believe he came on a right back just for a little bit, and then they moved Walker Peters on the other side. But even then, most of Brighton had preserved their players that they wanted to take off. They were putting on the substitutes, and he had 20 minutes to basically not have a howler against a team that we were already down and out by, basically. So, again, yeah, it was a bit disappointing. Didn't really do too much.
Mm. Like you said, at that point, the game was probably already beyond us. And I found an interesting stat that it's the game that's been most played where there's never been a home winner in the Premier League. It's either always been an away team or a draw to collect the points. So I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. Right. But we're on the back foot.
They kept saying that during the commentary, is that it, I think it's now 11 games where the fixture between Southampton and Brighton, the home team, have never won.
Oh, so you didn't understand. Oh, that's
it's very weird.
Yeah, I got it in the end.
That's quite cool, actually.
Not for us.
To say, a former Saint returned, Lallana. He didn't celebrate when he scored. And Mikey, I feel like you've looked at this goal the most. You've unpicked it. What went wrong, or how many things went wrong, if that's an easier question to ask?
I sat in a call with Harry. I watched the first 45 minutes of the game because I wanted to know what happened. I was at Havant, so I wasn't watching the game live on Prime. So, yeah, I sort of sat down, watched through the game, and went, right, I can see the issue. And what kept happening? So how we defended it intrigued me, because instead of defending in like a flat 4-1, we defended in a Christmas tree, basically, where you had Adams up top and you had Elianuzzi and Ward-Prowse just behind him. And then to try and narrow the team, Adosie and Gineppo would drop in, and they would narrow, and Diallo would be the single pivot player. So what Brighton decided to do was they moved their two most effective playmakers in Adam Lallana and Pascal Gross either side of Diallo. Because whenever they knocked the ball wide, Adosie or Gineppo had to go out and press, and that opened up this half space for them to drop in. Or if the two wide players weren't tight enough inside, Moises Caicedo, if we didn't put a press on him, he would just play a ball in between Diallo and the wide player into Lallana, and then they would spin it out. So that's how what happened for the first goal, was that Lallana picked the ball up. Diallo was nowhere near where he's supposed to be, because he had pressed and made a flat three with Elianuzzi and Ward-Prowse. He had gone out and pressed. Ball went into Lallana. He managed to have a touch, turned and played the ball wide. And Diallo did what every good defensive midfielder should have done, and he got gold side on Lallana. So he had done his job by that point. Then he stopped doing his job and he just started looking at the ball. And Lallana ran in front of him, not behind him, in front of him, clear run into the 18-yard box, and no one tracked his run. And Diallo was the man who was supposed to do that. Parada, I don't think, got tight enough to Solly March. And the ball's gone into the box. Lallana's got a free header off. It's an awful header, and Bazunu should do a lot better with it. But arguably, it should have been dealt with about three or four passes before it even occurred. Mm. Like, there are two or three chances where we could have cleared it before Lallana even got the ball. And yeah, we shouldn't have put Bazunu in that situation. He should have done better with the save. Mm. But there were so many little incidences and mistakes that led to that goal, and it sort of just shows the confidence really just isn't there at the moment. Little things like that.
It's interesting you mentioned that Christmas tree formation, because if they're playing higher up, it's interesting it's not a five, but it's a three, then a two, then a one, which seems very... There's a lot of vertical there, but like if you sit in a flat 4-4-2, you have two people in the middle, you sit in and allow them, if you want, out wide, which is what we're seeming to do in this Christmas tree, and if the ball gets switched quickly, then everyone squeezes over, don't they? Mm. But it seems like if you've got a three there, you've got one man in the middle who's either always going to be outnumbered, or when he squeezes over, it's always going to have a man behind him. So I didn't actually pick that up when I was watching it in the game.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting that he would allow that kind of, what would you call it, like he basically got overwhelmed in that midfield. Maybe that's why Diallo looks so poor, is because he always had two people and didn't know how to pick between them.
He was outnumbered because neither Ward-Prowse or Elie Nwusi dropped back, because they obviously weren't told to drop back at that point. So both of them were sat higher and the wingers were tucked in, but we know how, like, wingers aren't going to be disciplined defensively. Yeah. I think if you defend with a flat four and then have a one holding player, so I was talking to Harry, I think 4-2-3-1 would have been more effective, because then you could have a man on Gross and a man on Lallana, and that cuts out the centre of the pitch really effectively.
Yeah.
When, I know this is after the first goal, but when we went forward and Adozie got the free kick on the edge of the box that Ward-Prowse put wide, Brighton had like 8 or 9 players in the width of the 18-yard box. And it just made it impossible to break through the centre of us, of them. We couldn't break through the centre. We always had to go wide and try and go around. While Brighton found it so easy to cut through the centre of our team, because we had two midfielders that were a little bit too high and one defensive midfielder who was trying to mark two players. And it just didn't work. So that's why after the first goal, there's an instant switch of playing into a 4-4-2 instead. Mm. But we didn't have the players to play a 4-4-2 because Elie Nwusi's not striker. So you then sort of lack that effectiveness in that system. That was the problem for the first bit. And then we sort of started growing into the game a little bit more, and Brighton caught us again for the second goal.
Jeremy, is that something that Nathan Jones are going to have to adapt to, and adapt to very quickly, in the fact that maybe in the Championship, I don't watch it week in, week out, but maybe a lot of the middling teams, they don't make changes mid-game, they don't make a lot of them quickly in terms of how the game's going, so maybe that's why we sort of fell behind at times, because he just wasn't reacting to what was happening on the pitch.
Mm. I just think that's the one thing I don't like about the appointment, was that isn't a top league experience. And it's like, yes, he may on paper have all these qualities that we like and what we stand for as a club. However, you talk about that sort of adaptation in the middle of a game. He clearly, we don't write him off just yet, but he seems to not have understood that just yet.
It's interesting though, because I think I read somewhere that there was like 5 different noticeable formation changes within the game, which makes me, it seem like he was trying to change things. Mm. But I think also as a new manager coming in, if you don't, it's basically polar opposites to Ralph, because Ralph would stick to one, maybe two systems and live or die by them. We either do this and we get trounced, or we pull a result against a good team. Whereas Nathan Jones, I don't even think he knows himself what's working yet. So he's almost trying to find something that worked. We played 5, that didn't work. And we played 4, but then that didn't work against Brighton. So then we changed it. And then further into the second half, we did get it right. But there's also part of you thinking back ahead of Brighton just kind of, were they just cruising at this point, and we ended up getting a goal?
That just leads back to the adaptation of the Premier League. There won't be one system that will work against every single team, unless you are a City where you have to play to be able to do that. Where we're playing against different teams with different ability levels every single week, you have to have that adaptation of hang on, we can't stick to one and learn this. I think maybe if you give him a game or two more, he may be able to learn and adapt to what he works and have his three, even four maybe changes he can do. However, that's what I think we needed instantly with bringing in a new manager, someone who has the experience to change up. Okay. It's like bringing Sean Nurse, for example, not saying I would bring, but he has the experience in top league, for example, and knows how to play against these teams. Which right now, we're not saying we're in a relegation battle because it's January, but we need someone who could get an instant fix, not an overall success.
Mm. I find Brighton and Southampton are quite polar opposite clubs at the moment. And both went through very similar things. I know Potter moved on to Chelsea, but both have gone through managerial changes. But I think both are very different situations. Brighton were being successful at the time, so they know that they could have bought in a manager that did the same thing and it basically would effectively carry on and you could keep working on it. While we had Ralph, it wasn't working. Whatever it was, players losing faith, whatever, it didn't work. And that's why we changed it, is because it wasn't working anymore. And what we've done is we've bought in a manager that is really similar to Ralph in the fact that he wants to press high, he wants to play high pressing football, he wants to play fast football and he wants to be direct. And you look at that and go, well, if it wasn't working, why have we then bought in practically the exact same manager to then... And it's almost like I know we were saying before the break and when Ralph got sacked and who we wanted to be brought in, it was high pressing, it was a manager who's going to play in the same mannerisms, it was that... I think maybe we've got it wrong. I know we're two games in, three games into his reign, and you can't really tell what it's going to be like. But we need to be defensively structured. We conceded 60 goals. We were laughing at Bournemouth when they were conceding 60 goals a season. We're conceding 60 goals a season. We've got one clean sheet this
68
year.
68 this year.
We can't defend. And that's the number one priority, is we need to learn how to defend. We need to be structured. We need to have, like... actual like understanding of the way that we want to defend. I think the most important position to bring in is a six. I think the most important position for us to bring in January, forget striker, forget an eight, bring in a six, because we haven't replaced Romeu. I know that Diallo was slightly overloaded on Monday even, but Romeu deals with that situation so much better than any other player that we have. He deals with that situation. And we need to bring in a player that can actually replace him. And Lavia might be it, but he's not fit at the moment. So our next best option is Diallo. And I think he's proved that he's just not good enough. It's not for the want of trying. He tries his hardest. He tries his best. He's not talented enough or mentally strong enough to play in the Premier League.
I was going to agree with that, with the six. Not only in a defensive shape, but what I'd want from a six is to someone who will come in, and you notice it a lot. I think Ward-Prowse came into that six in the second half. And the difference you could see is, in our build-up play, Ward-Prowse is happy to take on that ball under pressure. Diallo was timid. He didn't want to come in, take that ball. Even if you just shift it off, it brings someone out and it brings space behind you and it gets the ball moving. Whereas if you don't have someone coming in, we played so many long balls because there was no movement in the midfield. No one was coming short to pull someone out. No one was coming in the middle or playing that ball on... Sometimes we used to play that ball on the floor straight into Che Adams so then he could play off into the midfield. We didn't do any of that in the first half. Centre-back, normally Lianco would play a long, direct, straight ball straight over to try and beat this whole midfield and defence and try and go over the tops of the wingers. It just didn't work. Ran out for goal kicks, went out for throw-ins, didn't make it, or just got headed straight back. We lost so much possession just playing long balls because we had no options in the midfield whatsoever. And I think it got better in the second half when Ward-Prowse did come deeper and get the ball. But still saw way too many long balls that were just basically aimless and didn't really get there at all.
I'm sort of worried that our strategy, because I've seen at places different online that we're looking for a defender, we're looking for a centre-back. And I don't think the way of getting better at defending is just buying more centre-backs. Otherwise, Chiletta-Sarr would have been the answer. Otherwise, Lianco would have been the answer. I think our defenders are fine. I think I agree with you two that we need an extra midfielder, a number six. It feels like we've almost got the idea of defenders do defending, midfielders do the possession, and strikers do the attacking. Whereas, you know, you look at Chelsea, Thiago Silva, he's so crucial, not just the defending, but other parts of their game as well. Do you think you know, they think that Nathan Jones, you know, I've still got faith, that Nathan Jones is the man to take us forward. Will they trust him in getting an experienced head? Because that's away from our philosophy of getting the 23 and unders. If we need this 27, 28, 29-year-old that's played 450-plus games, do you think that they'll trust him and get the right man in that could make the pivotal difference?
It's a difficult question to answer because it is away from our philosophy, and we know how involved the club has been. And you don't know on the inside whether they feel like even going into next season, if relegation does come, even going into next season, do they think that they'll have a squad good enough to come back straight back up again? Mm-hmm. Because that's the talk, is like, do they feel like they have to invest in the squad now, which it sounds like they're not going to big money wise. There may be money spent and there may be loan deals sorted and everything like that, but it doesn't feel like that they're going to invest just for the investment's sake. So I think that's all we've got, is that bringing in players that want to be in a relegation scrap, and there's not many players that would want to do that. No. Like, it's not a comfortable position to be bought into and sort of utilised in. It's going to be a struggle, because I know we always bought in players to be part of the system of play and be part of, what's the system? what is the system at the moment, and what is the way that Nathan Jones wants to play? Because I'm sure there's a sort of understanding from Jones of what he wants to do, but there's a lack of understanding from the players of what he wants to do, or as he said, a lack of bravery, which I didn't like the comment at the end of the game, keep that behind closed doors. But him saying that the players they didn't want to carry through the plan that he had. So what are you doing then? How are you going to fix that sort of thing? Are you going to bring in 2-3 lads from Luton who are going to sort of stick them down a little bit and make them understand what he wants to do? I don't know.
Is there any Luton players you'd want? That's the
I think that's the issue. The worry that I have is we're so poor on the possession front, and like, I know possession doesn't win games or whatever, but if you don't have the ball, then you can't really do much with it. So our ability to link players, Ollie said, is really, really poor, but we've got players who can do that. I think if you play Kaleta Carr as a centre half, he's a player who we bought in to be almost a Vestergaard-esque replacement, not in the defensive sense hopefully, but like in the ability to progress that ball forward effectively. That's something that he can do. Ward-Prowse dropping deeper as a six, I know he's not the most defensive minded, and he's not someone, especially in England, that we think of as a six, of someone who can break up play and do all that sort of stuff. But in a progressive mindset, when he dropped in against Lincoln, when he dropped in against Brighton, we played better because he can link play. Stuart Armstrong should be starting hands down every single game because he can link play, and he's that person who's going to get that ball from midfield and get it into the final third effectively. And there are players there who can do that, and unfortunately they're either not being played or not utilised in the way that I think they should. And of course, Jones knows more than I do on that front, because he works with them week in, week out. But it just feels like if you're struggling to hold onto the ball and you're struggling to create chances, make use of those effective players that you have in the ability of progressing that ball forwards.
I was going to talk about the transfer market a bit later, but we're on the topic now, so I'll ask you, Ollie. If it was like a lot of people think that we should be spending 60, 70 million to, you know, guarantee safety, get the big striker, get the big midfielder, whatever they think, because the position we're in, because it's January and everyone's a lot higher value, do you think it's just they're living in dreamland, and the fact they want a 20-goal season striker? John, if you can find one for 15, 20 million, fair enough. But apart from Iheanacho at Leicester, I was looking through all the names on the transfer list, on Transfermarkt's like website. There's no one there that I could see wanting to come, at least on a full-time basis, on a loan. I think it's just almost an impossible task where we're going to have to look in, not in the cheap section, but in the section that we normally do, because otherwise why would they want to come to play in the Championship next season?
Yeah, you've got to find something that's got there's a slight issue there. Like, we took a risk on Danny Ings and he ended up, you know, doing well for us. Mm. But there's also times we've done that with someone, say Charlie Austin, and it hasn't worked. But we're not going to get a guarantee if we enter the transfer market in January. It's going to be someone who costs way too much, or someone who has a potential issue that they haven't overcome, whether that be an injury, issue or a confidence issue or something like that. That's not a play you really want to bring in to kind of secure things down.
No.
So, you know, if you're a 15, if you've got off the mark, you've got 15 goals already this season in possibly a lower league or in a different cup, why would you go, oh, absolute rock bottom of the Premier League? Not sure. The manager is unproven, not many people know him. You know, sometimes we used to have people sign because they had a really good chat with Ralph and really bought into his philosophy. And does Nathan Jones have that same pull with players? We don't know. So the only reason we're really going to be able to get them over is if we give them a big pay rise. Well, is that going to motivate them in a relegation battle? Or are they just going to collect their paycheck at the end of the week and go, oh, thank you very much, I'm going to, you know, double my wages and sit on the bench or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's a very difficult... very difficult challenge to try and find something, definitely much harder than the summer. And we weren't able to pull off two signings in the summer, and they fell through, so I think January will be even tougher. And I really don't want people to get their hopes up and think we're definitely going to bring in a solution, because it's a very small likelihood that that happens.
Well, going back to the game, one of the things that Nathan Jones will have to sort out right now, and he's got a big decision to make, is whether Pazunu stays in the team. He made maybe one mistake, I'm not too sure about the other ones, but certainly one for the opening goal. What do you think he should do, Jamie? You know, Pazunu, 20-year-old goalkeeper, certainly got a future, a long-term future here. Does he go with McCarthy? He wasn't in this squad. I don't know if it was illness, injury, something like that.
He's an ankle injury.
Yeah, but he might return. What should he do with that situation?
I'm starting to feel a bit of an Angus Gunn-esque.
No.
I know. It might be a bit
for
too
Man City
early.
As well.
No.
But yeah, I'd say, like, if we did drop him now, that would just kill his confidence, surely. Mm. And I think, like, Angus Gunn never came back from that. But does he have the mentality strength to do so? Because I think he's got keepers around him who have got quality. Like, Caballero, despite his age, still can pull off a decent game.
Mm.
And the same with McCarthy. It's just, I think, who can he learn from and what can he take from each player and get better?
I'd
do you time out the limelight, the time out the firing line?
No, I'd continue playing it. I'd double down and kind of back him, because he is young and he'll make mistakes, but we've also seen him make excellent saves as well.
Yeah.
So with Angus Gunn, you had saves that he wasn't making and there wasn't anything exceptional that really backed him up either.
Mm.
Whereas we're seeing sparks of brilliance with Pazunu playing, but I just think...
But would you rather more of a... Not saying Max McCarthy is reliable, but he would be even less erratic and more just stop a few balls rather than... Alex McCarthy doesn't make big mistakes, I'd say, like that. His isn't as good.
But then you'd also be losing your... distribution. Remember, Alex McCarthy's distribution was pretty poor, whereas Pazunu has that. And once we get the team playing correctly and do get that possession playing better, then hopefully Pazunu can build into that philosophy as well. Whereas I think if you take him out, it's going to hinder his confidence, and we're going to lose our style and the fact that we do want to play out the back. We do want a bit of confidence. And the distribution that we'll lose from him as well.
Just, it's something going back to experience again. McCarthy has that experience of the relegation battle, and that he won't have that in the back of his head where Pazunu will be like, oh wow, this is all on me. That's the only reason why I could possibly justify a switch in keeping, just because he has that experience of, we're facing relegation here, and he saved us in 2017.
He did. I think Pazunu doesn't look like he's dropped off.
Yeah,
I think he's just making mistakes and they're being punished because it's the Premier League, it's the most competitive league in the world. But I don't think I can necessarily see it. He doesn't look like a player who's dropped in confidence. I think he is just making occasional mistakes. So I don't think it would be wise to drop him. I think continue playing him.
I'm going to go from a statistical point of view and so completely objective.
Right.
But I think I did a little bit before the World Cup started, where we didn't necessarily concede amazing chances per shot. We didn't, like, it wasn't like we were giving away opportunities easily. We every shot that they take, it's not like it's a guaranteed goal. Pazunu has the worst save percentage in the league. He saves the shot 55% of the time. He has the worst post shot of expected goals. So after the shot is taken, what's the expected goals and how likely he is to save it? He, according to FBref, and this is according to Opta, has conceded 9 more goals than he should have done this year. And you're talking 9 goals, which you could talk about points and 3 points that have been dropped because of Bazunu lacking that ability to save those shots. What he does bring is really good coming off his line, stopping crosses, which is something we had problems with in the past, where Forster couldn't get off his line and McCarthy couldn't get off his line. So he does that really, really well. He didn't quite stop the cross against Brighton for the second goal, but overall he does do that very well, and he's also off his line really well getting to balls, which he demonstrated against Brighton, of course. And it's a difficult one, because when you do look back at some of the goals we have conceded, you do look at we probably he could have got to that, he could have done better. There's also elements at the other end of the pitch where you can't point it exactly to Bazunu, because Che Adams scored a handball against Wolves that would have made it 1-1. I don't know if people saw the thread of misses that Southampton have had over the last 3 years. They were awful. They're horrendous. They nearly brought a tear to my eye. It was really, really bad. But there's an argument saying, does Bazunu deserve to stay in? I would say no. Do you keep him in? I think you probably say yes. Just to keep with his, you got to back the lad, because it's a very similar situation to Angus Gunn. That's what came into my mind. Is it feels like it's a similar situation to Angus Gunn, but he hasn't conceded 9 yet. So it felt like Gunn after that result. He was that was him done in a Saints shirt. Like after a couple of results, but we saw moments of brilliance from Angus Gunn. Like his performance away at Chelsea, where he kept that clean sheet, where he took the number one shirt away from Forster and McCarthy, and he started really putting himself out there as a fantastic goalkeeper, and then it got taken away from him in one result. And Bazunu, it's sort of been a small decline of what I feel like his confidence going, but all he needs is one good game, and all of a sudden it's back up again. So I think you keep Bazunu in for the moment until it really starts getting bad.
Yeah. So that made it 1-0 and 2-0 through Parade's own goal. And the fact that we were playing poorly, Ollie, but at the same time, it almost felt like the two individual goals weren't necessarily Nathan Jones's fault. It was two just moments of poorness, if that's a good word to use.
But it was sustained pressure that we had consistently over the first half. And there were chances that they should have put away as well. They had two close ones that went past. There was headers that went over. And I only remember us having one Elianusi header that went sailing over the bar. And I remember that being the only shot we had in the first half, pretty much. So if there weren't others that went in, there was moments of errors under our side, but they were very close to scoring even more. It could have been a bit like the Chelsea game. They could have been 4-0 up within 20 minutes. They were completely all over us, and it was domination, really.
Going into the second half, it felt like we played a bit better. I thought Adozie had a few good chances, and I remember looking at the highlights a bit earlier because I wasn't able to catch the game. I was thinking, if only those chances fell to, and then my brain stops, because then I sort of realised that there's no one that I'd really want our chances to fall to at the moment, and that may be where the striker has to come in. But then the third goal, Solly March, there's not a lot you can do about it. I've got a quick game for all of you. All of you have one guess. How many games before this one had it been since Solly March last scored?
Yeah. He missed his penalty against Charlton as well, didn't he?
I don't know.
He missed the penalty against Charlton too.
Over 100.
You reckon? I'll go for 65.
I'll go for 82, round about in the middle.
104.
58.
I know he had the most shots in the league without scoring until this point.
And there was a lot of Brighton fans. I always look, you know, when Saints retweet the team sheet for the other team, I had a look, and you had a lot of fans going, oh, this has to be the game for him, because apparently he'd been playing poorly. Or at least the Brighton fans on Twitter thought he was playing poorly recently. So he got backed, he started, and he played well. I think there was a deflection on the shot, wasn't it? I mean, it's a pretty lovely shot, but yeah. I mean, I think it took a little dink that put it away from the keeper. But yeah, pretty unstoppable, really. And a lot of time to get it away as well, which is the disappointing part.
It just annoyed me that he managed to drift inside with that amount of time to be able to take 3 or 4 touches before having the shot off.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Ward-Prowse probably should have been a little bit closer to him than he was, and I mean, he's not having a good season either, is he? He scuffed the penalty slightly at Sanchez and got a bit lucky with the rebound. But yeah, it just feels like everything's not going quite the way that everyone wants it to go at the moment. So yeah, needs some fixing.
Yeah, so that was 3-0, and then like you say, Adozie creates the penalty. Well, we don't score the penalty, the rebound goes in. What sort of takeaways can you take from that game?
Can you take away?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was... It scares me when players come out and say, oh yeah, we had a game plan, but we weren't able to implement it. Well, why weren't you able to do it? That's a scary part. I think the formation wasn't right from the start. I think the players that were picked, I think Gineppo and Diallo were the two poorest players on the pitch in the first half. So I don't know what they did in the week to be able to get picked, but I'm glad they got recognised and took off at half time, because it did change afterwards. But I think Gineppo did not look fit. There were points where he was walking back, and I think that must be a fitness issue or an injury, because he looked completely off the pace.
So it's just sad to see that when the light comes up, you just know for a fact that those two players will be the first two to come off.
Yeah, they were having a terrible game. They would, and it really makes me, like, I mean, Mike was mentioning Stuart Armstrong. What did Stuart Armstrong do Gineppo does to get picked? Because Gineppo was wasteful with his possession when he had it. He wasn't tracking back. He looked unfit, and he got hooked off at half time. It just makes me wonder how he got picked in the first place. That's what I was confused. And everyone in the lineup must have seen it when they came through and thought, hang on, that's a bit strange.
His weird new contract he signed, saying he must start a few games this season.
I don't know.
That was my takeaway. I was puzzled. I was happy to see it changed at half time and changed early, but I was confused by the team sheet in the first place.
Jamie and then Mikey, what are your takeaways before we move on to Fulham, which should be a barrel of fun?
Don't ever start Gineppo and Diallo again.
Hey, that was mine.
You got the same.
Fucking paste.
I think a takeaway is that we've got experience in the side, and we've got players who can affect games better than the ones that started. And I know it's almost like you've got to know your squad, and Jones will have his players that he likes already, but there's players out there that can make an impact, and there's players that not in the squad that can make an impact. And it feels like we've had this rigmarole with Ralph where you've had players that you feel like can do something out there, and they're not involved. And Nathan Jones is supposed to come in and involve those players a little bit more. It's supposed to be a fresh start, clean slate for everyone. And it seems like we've just gone back into the same sort of players are still starting and still getting game time. I think it just shows how important Lavia is to the side, even though he's 18. I think it really does show how important he is in progressing that ball forward and helping us create chances from deeper spaces and keeping the ball and retaining possession. So, yeah, the sooner he gets fit, the better.
Right, Fulham, the last game before 2023. And for a lot of people, including myself and maybe you guys, I can't really remember the Premier League predictions at the start, but they were at the bottom of my Premier League table. I thought they'd be at, just going straight back down, but 22 points after 9 games under Marco Silva. They signed Paulinho, Leno, Diop, Duffy, Pereira, Willian, and Babu James, Carlos Vinicius, Solomon, and Kurzawa. Some of them transfer, some of them
loans.
What have you made of them so far this season? I guess you haven't watched every single game, but just from the bits and pieces, what have you thought?
Well, Mitrovic has finally proved, I don't know whether this is his first, second, or third attempt at trying to be a 10-15 goal scorer for Fulham, but he seems like he's finally done it this year, and he looked scarily good creating chances for Fulham, and I think he was involved with 2 assists, 1 goal in the last game against Crystal Palace. With a side like us who are struggling to defend as well, it might be a challenging one to keep him quiet. But yeah,
Jamie, how about you? You know, just before the break, they lost 2-1 to Man City and 2-1 to Manchester United, but both of them were 93rd minute, heartbreaking moments. What have you seen from them that you like, or hopefully dislike?
It's just odd. They finally, because obviously every time they come up, they always spend like 100 plus million and buy like 10 different players.
Andre Schürrle and Ryan Babel.
And it's finally, for the third time, lucky, kind of worked out for them.
Yeah.
And it's just very irritating to see how they did this big squad overhaul just like us.
Yep.
But
did it well.
They did it well because they brought experience within that as well. They brought Willian in, who, think about it, won't be the best player, but he's played in the Premier League for maybe 10 years maybe.
Something around there.
So there's still a lot of experience. And Vinicius played in Premier Spurs, they brought back players that actually played top league, top divisions, even still, not even to the Premier League, but actual experienced players where we didn't. And well, weird enough, it works.
Mm.
But I don't know. I think of our run we've got coming up, we've got very favourable teams. But Fulham aren't a favourable team. Tim Yard is very good now. And honestly, I'm not too sure about what we're going to do, because I think maybe Brighton would be easier. Brighton would be a harder team to beat. But no, I think I'm going wrong there. I think Fulham will be a lot tougher task.
Yeah, especially away from home. Out of the transfer that they've made, Mike, is there anyone that's especially impressed you? And what should we change going into this? Because there seems like that could be a very long list.
It's not fair that Fulham signed João Paulinho, is it? Like, he's just everywhere for him. I was just looking at the statistics now. He's got the most tackles in every third for Fulham. Every single third, he's got the most tackles for him. He is everywhere and he is unbelievable. And his partnership with Harrison Reed, who is now 27.
What?
That's why my eyes went wide. He's 27. But yeah, his partnership with Harry Reid, he's proven that he's good enough for the Premier League this year as well. I think he did probably last time that Fulham went up. But his partnership with Harry Reid is key to how they play. Andreas Pereira, of course, is the one that people will point fingers at. He's such a good creative force for Fulham. But it's Mitrovic is the guy that... Last time I felt sorry for him, which is weird considering he's not the nicest person. But I felt sorry for him because he sort of dragged Fulham to the Premier League and the Championship under Scott Parker. And then they went, no, we're not going to play that way anymore.
Yeah,
and he just sort of like outed from the side. And he's come back this year and Marcus Silva's based the entire system around him. And he scored 30... You will know how many goals he scored in the Championship.
It's like 43.
Yeah, he scored a ridiculous amount of goals in the Championship, and that's what Fulham have, and that's why they're currently top 10 in the Premier League, because they've got someone who sticks that ball in the back of the net on a consistent basis, and they've got a system that everyone understands and works around and gets the ball into Mitrovic, and he's such a complete forward as well.
How do we beat them then?
I don't know.
That's the mystery.
I haven't watched Fulham enough to really know how we can break them down. I also haven't watched Nathan Jones enough to know what system he's going to play and how he's going to implement in the squad. I just think it's a basis of what can we do and how can we improve. And I think the main thing is, can we keep the ball better? I think that's... It was such a frantic... I mean, I only watched the first half, but it was such a frantic 45 minutes of play where I think at one point, 35 minutes into the game, Brighton had 250 passes. We had 66, I think. Probably not even that.
Mm.
We need to be able to keep the ball, and it's something that we have an inability of doing this year. Under Ralph, under Jones, both, we've not been able to keep the ball effectively. So I think that will be my one thing, will be, can we keep possession better? Can we actually pass the ball by keeping the ball on the deck? And can we be effective doing it? And if we can do those three things, we'll play better and we'll give Fulham a game.
Right, here's the fun part of the podcast. It's score prediction time.
Woo! I don't know if I actually want to do one.
This is score prediction time where, you know, we predict the score of the upcoming game. The last time for 2022. Jamie, what are you going to say?
2-1 Southampton.
Whoa.
Right, a nice away win to end the year. Mikey?
1-1. Ollie special here.
And
2-1. 2-1 Saints.
2-1. I'm going to go for a second clean sheet and hopefully
wow.
1-0.
Yeah. How many clean sheets have you predicted this year and it's not come off?
I think 1-0 is just like a hopeful prediction. I think
just
that's,
please, yeah, please.
Please, someone do something at some point.
But it's like, it's again, even though we're bottom of the league, it's not far off that we can sort of break out of it. So it's not panic stations at the moment. But like mathematically, it's not panic stations. When you look at the performance, it may be slightly. Yeah. So I think that's the way you take it, is that one win, we could be out of the bottom three. And I know it's the statistic that the last team that stayed up being bottom at Christmas was Leicester, but we've got a couple games in hand on them. Yeah. So fingers crossed we can use those games effectively.
Does that mean we're going to win the league by more points
next season? That's what I was. That's what the Alfie House said on Twitter, wasn't it? Is that he was going to, of course they went on and won the league next year. So who knows? Nathan Jones could be the next Claudio Ranieri. Yeah. Just have to have a weird catchphrase and keep buying the players pizza and you'll be happy.
Would it be the English version though? So we just get fish and chips every single time.
I mean, Welsh, so it would just be like Welsh cakes and lamb, I think. Yeah.
sounds quite nice. And then, what's those the flowers they have? The yellow ones? The yellow flowers, Welsh, they're like.
The yellow flowers.
Are you saying that they're going to eat them or they're going to give them to the friends? Yeah.
Well, they just each get a yellow flower.
I don't know. I'm
not sure. Do we have a high Welsh portion that we need to cut this for?
No. Anyway, that's enough. We've talked about Lincoln, so we have talked about a win this season, and also the disappointing defeat against Brighton, and also preview the upcoming game against Fulham. It's been me, Harry Tizard. I've been joined by Jamie Allen.
Thank you for listening.
Mikey Maysman.
It's a daffodil.
And on the
post. Thank you very much.
We'll see you next week. Remember, you can check us out anywhere on any of your good podcasting platforms, and we'll see you next week.
I probably know we're on a podcasting platform.